was that?
There's no covert recording here. All right, welcome to the Park Scope. This is the unofficial podcast. We'll be given probably my thing, the Immersive Irony Podcast. Welcome to the Park Scope Immersive Irony Podcast. It's me, Alan, here with Alex. Hey, Alex.
Hello, all.
And we are each awaiting our own wintry fates. How's it going to be in Philadelphia tomorrow?
Oh, God. I don't know. It was nice today.
Today was all right, but I was told in very effusive terms that there was going to be ice tomorrow. Like, it was so bad that they canceled my bus for tomorrow morning from my house to here yesterday. So, I know it's bad. I have no idea how bad, but I know it's going to be, like, awful. And so I'm stuck in Ann Arbor today.
High of 63 tomorrow.
I'm looking at periods of freezing rain early tonight, becoming heavier overnight. Rain and freezing rain in the morning.
Yeah.
Question mark. Ice. No idea. Could be horrible. So, pray for me. Pray.
Yeah, like last week, like, there's this trail I've been trying to do. It's there and back. It's 24 miles, so I'm pretty much, I need a day where I'm actually not, like, completely busy, which is very few. And I wanted a day where it's actually cold, because this trail keeps on defeating me. Whether it's just getting tired or too much mud. Mostly too much mud, so that's why I want it freezing temperatures, so the mud is actually just frozen.
Yeah.
It's just, I want to complete this damn trail. It's so close to me. It's like 5 minutes away. I just want to be able to say I got to the, you know, all the way to the end and back. And it keeps eluding me.
I was going to say, last Wednesday and Thursday were particularly bad days.
Yeah, it was too cold. Like, it would have been completely frozen, but I would have been frozen. So.
Yeah, you would have died.
Yeah, that too.
We'll see how timely this gets out there with Joe being on his vacation.
Yeah, Joe goes to Florida and we do the roadcast.
Not that I'm not going to Florida. But no, that's... I mean, I am, but that's, you know, next week or whatever.
Oh, you are? Okay.
Yeah. I doubt I'll run into Joe because, like, yeah, Parkscope, whatever his name is, that's getting married, that's initiating all of this, is like, we're not going to meet with any weird internet people. And I think I probably qualify as that. So, I'm not going to probably hang out with him at all, or if I do, very minimal amounts. But, you know, that's his loss. And, but anyways, that's neither here nor there.
He actually got to SeaWorld today, though.
He did. He didn't message me at all. Did he say anything to you?
At mentioned me because he had the fanboy out and go to Universal for a few hours first. Just couldn't help himself. I am going. Trust me.
So, I want to know if he went to any shows or anything like that. Or
I don't know. I know that it was at bars a lot.
Yeah, I don't know. It'd be interesting to see, like, to what degree he planned any of that.
I think he's at Disney tonight, or I'm not sure.
He's going to be at Disney pretty much the rest of the time. So,
okay. Are you going down for work or pleasure?
For pleasure.
I had no idea.
It's a little on the covert side. I'll be down there for a very short period of time. And I will totally be at work. 100%. Yeah. So, I don't plan to miss any work as a result of my travel to Florida. I would like to publicly state that now. So, as we were talking about stuff, so you just did a trip out to Western New York.
I also just missed out whatever you just said for like the last minute, but that's okay.
That's fine. It's totally okay.
I guess I'll be surprised when I listen back. Anyway.
You did a trip to Western New York. I'm trying to think if I did anything of any consequence at all, and I don't think that I did. Do we want to talk about news before we do trip reports on alpine coasters and the like?
Yeah, we'll talk a little bit of news. Do you have any items?
So the biggest thing I think that has happened is, you know, there's a bunch of information that was given out at No Coaster and at East Coaster, ACES, not off-season events. Sort of the bulk of what was interesting was what was discussed about Nickelodeon Universe at American Dream.
Yep, that's what I was thinking we were going to talk about. We got names, finally.
We got names. We're not really that much closer to hearing about opening date. They still seem to be talking about April, I think, right?
Yeah.
Which seems really hard to believe from the pictures I've seen, but
like,
maybe I'm
missing
something.
I don't know what the most recent picture they've actually shown us, but the last picture, it still looks like an empty warehouse.
Yeah,
built in it.
Yeah, that's what I was getting at. It seems like it's a long ways away from being able to open, but maybe I just, you know, I lack the imagination. I don't know.
And I mean, do the water park and amusement park have the ability to open before the rest of the mall? Do we know that either? Is the mall ready?
I don't know. I don't even know how much mall there is to the mall. It seems to be mostly like, you know, stuff. That's not really mall stuff. Like, it's more like other things.
I thought it was the whole package. I don't know. I've never... Well, any media source that I've been looking at really doesn't bring up the shopping part because that's not what they would be about. But, I don't know. We don't even know if we've... I mean, as far as I know, we haven't been shown any pictures of the Chance.
No.
Which is called the Slime Streak. So I don't know if that's even been built. We got a layout for that. Kind of reminds me a little bit of West Coaster, Santa Monica Pier.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So. I think it's a lot of... I mean, obviously you have the Takabisha clone.
Right.
Which is kind of like your big ride. The spinning coaster is very impressive.
The shredder.
Shredder. And then there's just kind of everything else, right? Like, and not that the everything else is bad. Just, it's there.
We found out that the Intamin, the Sandy's Blasting Bronco, that's that name. And we also found that it's going to have a rotating station like Pulsar.
I mean, it looks cool. I mean, I'm not going to sit here and be mad about all these new coasters that they're getting. It looks rad.
Yeah, I wish we'd found out a little bit more about maybe the package.
I still want to know more. It doesn't look like it's opening with a dark ride, which is kind of surprising to me for some reason. Like, I thought they would have gone with something, like a shooter, but maybe they'll add that in later.
The funny thing is, I mean, the dark ride over at America, it's not even themed to anything Nickelodeon.
No, it's an exact duplicate of the one at Lake Compounds, or at least the original version of the one at Lake Compounds.
Okay. But, yeah. The Nickelodeon, I feel like it's always needed a... love to see a higher budget dark ride from the Nickelodeon property.
Yeah, like anything really that was slightly higher budget.
SpongeBob, you've had stuff like that, but like nothing. I don't know how you feel about Sally Dark Rides. How do you feel about Sally Dark Rides?
How do I feel about Sally's Dark Rides?
Yeah.
They're fine.
I think they're kind of cheap.
Like, do they excite me? Not really, but.
Yeah, I mean, most of them just seem so cheap. You usually have like one really cool animatronic that's like their point. But then it's a lot of, painted plywood.
I think it just depends on the budget. I think if you give Sally the money to do something more impressive, they do it, right?
Like, yeah, I mean, they did do E.T., so.
Yeah, they did Justice League. I'm sure they've done a million dark rides overseas. I know I've been on several that they've done. I think it just comes down to the budget that you're given. If all you have is like a baseline $3 million, then you're going to get a $3 million ghost
Blaster's Dark Ride.
I have to say one thing though. If they want to put a Dark Ride in, we did see a they showed at the Doozy's event. They showed the full layout of the water park and the theme park. Just the overview, like not detailed. You know, like basically a blueprint.
Yeah.
And we did see that the area completely underneath Shredder and Hellraiser, it's painted green, so assuming there's really not going to be anything under there, but theoretically you could do something like Buzz, not Buzz, the Toy Story Mania, where they put that underneath a credit coaster.
Yeah, no, absolutely. And there's, you know, those coasters are big, like...
You want some things to be missing from an indoor park because it's harder for them to add stuff. So I'm okay with the less of it. Does that make sense? Like, because like if you don't have like if people might complain that there's empty spaces, but then if you don't, then they'll complain that they've never done any additions because you know unless you expand the building, there's nowhere to put anything.
I see what you're saying. I think American Dream. Probably will have at least the capacity to expand the buildings out a little bit. I can't imagine that they're going to be just so hamstrung they can't do anything.
The park is like, I know on one direction, I mean, you got the building on the other side, the mall on the other side, and then on the other side, like, the interstate is not that far away from it. I mean, when I passed it back in June, I could make out the Intamin very clearly.
You know, they do have a Legoland Discovery Center that's going in. That'll probably have a dark ride.
Oh, they're putting one of those in there? Okay.
Yeah, so here's all the stuff that it's getting aside from...
That's surprising because there's already one in the New York area. Is it replacing that one or is it...
No, it's in an addition.
Okay.
So it's above and beyond. Was it East Farming? No, it's not East Farmingdale. Where is
that? No, it's up north of the city.
Yeah.
In northern, like, New York City area.
Like, not New Rochelle, that's another place, New Rock City, which itself its own freak
show. Yeah. I believe it was kind of near where that wedding I had to go to if Ariel was.
There's Big Snow America, which is the indoor ski park.
Yeah, and can we talk about that after you list everything?
Yeah, sure. DreamWorks Water Park. Obviously, the Nickelodeon theme park. There's an observation wheel, which is attached to it.
Okay.
Merlin will have Sea Life Aquarium and Legoland Discovery Center. There'll be a NHL regulation sized year-round ice rink, a Kidzania, and a luxury theater. So it's actually a little bit like some of the Dubai malls in that it's just full of like all this entertainment stuff and then maybe some shopping too.
They haven't really talked about any traditional shopping.
Yeah, as far as, like, the retail goes, if you go on their website, there's not very much listed. There's, like, H&M is pretty much the only thing there. It says, world's leading brands have chosen American Dream for their largest mall-based flagship locations. And so it's, like, H&M and Zara. So... Oh. Yeah, don't expect a lot, like, in terms of...
I don't really care about it. I just figured that was... I didn't really think about it, because I just figured that was going to be there, like...
Yeah, I think they're going more for this idea of a...
Indoor entertainment complex.
Yeah, like an entertainment lifestyle complex sort of thing, rather than a traditional gigantic mall. And I think that'll probably serve them well. I mean, if you're in that same part of the world... And you want a gigantic mall that has nothing else but mall, you can always go to the Palisades Mall.
True. I just figured that this was going to be that, you know, that it would do well as a shopping center because it's a hell of a lot easier to get to from New York City. Palisades Mall is kind of up there.
Yeah. I think I think that the majority of people that are in New York City that want to shop are probably already in New York City shopping, and I just think that they're kind of looking at this being something different, probably for people more outside the city. Like, the idea of having roller coasters available in January is going to be appealing to people in New York, I think, for sure. I mean, it is in Minneapolis, and I can't imagine that New York City, with having like six times as many people, is going to be less likely to care. I personally, I think it's going to be a huge win of a whole thing. Like, I think it's going to succeed wildly once it actually gets up and running. But you wanted to talk about the skiing.
Yeah. So, you know, with our buddy Hyde over there going to Ski Dubai last week.
Yes.
Just buddy and I, while we were on this little road trip, we're just talking about it, and we're both like, "Okay, I get that. Get, you know, it's for them. It's in Dubai. Obviously, it's kind of a definite novelty. Hell, but like, if I ever went to Dubai, I don't think I'd ever do it. I mean, it's a bunny hill. I would be bored in a second." And I don't think I'd waste the time or money going there. Maybe I'd go there and take a look at it and be like, "Oh, okay," because it's near other attractions, correct? Right?
It's so it's in the Mall of the Emirates, a Ski Dubai.
Does that have any credits?
Which is like a 10-minute cab ride from Wild Wadi.
Oh, okay.
And maybe like a 15 or 20-minute ride from the Palm, where Atlantis is located. But I wouldn't say that it's like, it's not like it's in the Dubai Mall, which is where they have that, now it's a VR park, what used to be the Sega Joyopolis, or Sega Republic.
Did that reopen with the coaster reopen there?
Oh yeah, they got on it. Yeah, it was closed when I was there in 2017, but they reopened it since then. And now, so now you have like two competing video game parks in Dubai, like not quite across the street from one another, because both locations are way too big to have a street between them. But there's the Dubai Mall, and then there's Hub Zero, which is the other one. I don't think they did Hub Zero, but Hub Zero is actually run, it turns out, by Dubai Parks and Resorts for some reason. I don't know why they decided to build that thing not in Dubai Parks, but in Dubai, but, you know, whatever. It's, I don't run them, obviously.
But my point is, I know it's not for me, but it's still, being in a cold weather area, does that make sense to you, to have the indoor ski resort that's going to cost a lot of money?
It is, but I think the idea is the idea of like attracting people to go snow in June, like go ski in June, you know. Or if you are a tourist from somewhere that's cold that doesn't have, or somewhere that's not cold that doesn't have snow. So basically, if you come from Brazil or somewhere in the tropics and you head up to the United States to go visit, you know, then again, the American Dream is kind of an interesting spot. I mean, the big thing is it was already there. Like, that, they had already built the infrastructure for the hill.
Oh, yeah, I know. That's
when they built it at Xanadu. So, since you already had it, they were, I think they were pretty much of the thought process that, like, well, I guess we've got this, so let's finish it out.
I think that, I don't, that part of it just seems like it's not going to,
I don't know, I don't know how it's going to do either. I mean, it seems to me like
2 hours, and you're at the Poconos, and even less to go up to northern New Jersey. To, you know, like,
if you live in New England, you can go to, you know, Okemo or something like that.
Oh, yeah, I forgot, you can go that way, too. I mean, yeah. It just seems like I get the summer thing, but, like, okay, you know, we'll see how that part works.
I agree with you. I'm kind of more on the fence about it. I think it's an interesting novelty.
And they're gonna
but
have
I don't
a
know
price
how long it's gonna last.
And they're gonna. I wouldn't be surprised if you know, a lift ticket and all that crap, it would cost more money than going to one of the local.
Yeah, and actually doing a real mountain and
right,
having
because
superior snow conditions.
You gotta make all that snow inside. You gotta keep it cold, and it's not like it's like an advantage of, oh, look, we can, you know, ski somewhere warmer. No, it's still just as cold as outside. If anything, you know,
yeah.
And it's always cold. It's not like you can have some, you know, like spring skiing when it's you don't have to have all the layers on.
Right. Yeah. No, I'm with you. I don't know that it'll do as well. Like you said, like when you compare it to something like Ski Dubai, where Dubai has a lot of people that travel to it from India, which is that's a longstanding, it's a thing, because that's who invested in the oil industry first there, and in the aluminum industry too, were a lot of people from India. So India has always had that kind of weird close tie to the UAE. People that are in Mumbai have never really gone skiing, so again, it's also a novelty to them. But it's less of a novelty, I think, like you said, in New York, like where skiing is actively available nearby. But
Like,
we'll see. We'll
I feel
see.
like this could work in Orlando a hell of a lot better than.
I agree. I kind of it's kind of surprising on some level that no one has gone the indoor park direction in Orlando.
And
And I'll
if you
be
did
interested to
that, like,
hear the
you
In
want
the
the
Loop
funny part?
podcast now that it's up about that too.
Yeah, I haven't had a chance yet, but I looked at the vertical on that. I was just curious. It's like only like Ski Dubai is like 300 vertical. That's it.
Yeah.
I mean, which is a huge freaking building, but as far as the mountain goes, that's even small for. That's like really small. Anything that small is pretty much had to close and it didn't make it.
We will all be interested to see how it works out,
You
I'm
know that
sure.
Mike Mount Otan, do you know that Mount Brighton is owned by Vail?
I did not know that.
Yeah, I could go for there ski there for free. I don't know why I would, unless I'm visiting you and I like, well, I'm visiting you and I have a free pass.
You can come visit me anytime. Michigan's great.
Oh yeah, it sounds really great, the ice storm.
Well, after the ice is gone,
Yeah.
there's plenty of fun things to
I
do.
do want to do that bobsledding. Lugeing, whatever that thing is. I think
Oh,
you
we've
posted
got
a
the lugeing. Yeah,
Yeah,
oh,
sometime.
this is well, obviously the ice storm is a perfect time to do it afterwards, since they don't even have to like do anything to prep the luge track. It'll just be nice and iced up anyways. Yeah, come on out. Or we'll go do Boblo.
Yeah, 1 year.
One of these days.
And then I have to say one thing that the theming of the water park, the one thing they released was that even though I absolutely hate the movies, Panda. Yeah, I've tried to block it out. They put Po sitting on a toilet on top of the middle of the toilet bowl. That's pretty awesome.
Yeah.
Yeah, the toilet bowl water slide. We're looking into it. We might get a pass this year. We might not. We might wait a little bit. I don't know.
I'm
I think they
definitely gonna make a
announced the.
trip out there because I have to. I mean,
I got to do it
anytime.
this year, but one year we might get a pass. It just depends on how much shell that is, if they offer one. They haven't. I think they've released dailies, but they haven't released anything about a pass or anything.
I bet you it's gonna be expensive.
Yeah.
I get the sense that they're gonna charge a lot of money at least the first year. And maybe they'll lower it, but I wouldn't be surprised if it ends up being like a $300 pass.
Oh, Jesus.
I'm serious. Think
Well,
about it.
depends on what
Like,
it would include. If it included like all three things.
I mean, probably just for the park. I think they're going to
Oh,
charge a
God.
lot. And maybe if they, I don't know if they'll. I'm sure it'll be a segregated, water park in terms of. It'll probably be separately located in the mall too. So, not like a convenient, trip over in your bathing suit to go from one to the other. Yeah, I bet it's going to be expensive at first. I think they're going to want to try and keep it from being like a babysitting location for like the people of Greater Newark and what are like Hoboken and stuff like that. But we'll see. We'll see.
We'll see.
I'll be interested to see what they do
I'll
as far
definitely
as
be there
pricing. But I
sometime
expect
this
it to be
year.
like I'm expecting like $200 to $300. But at 365 days a year, maybe it's worth it. I don't know.
Yeah, and I imagine, I mean, during the weeks. I know when I went to
Mall of America.
yeah. We'll see. I don't know. We'll see. I think going early might be good, like just after the hype has died down.
I assume I'll probably get out there. I'm hoping for like November. I figure if I get
Oh,
out
okay.
there like early November, when everything is closing up here, like then it's worth it kind of to make that trip. And it's an easy flight to go to from here to Newark nonstop. That's not a problem.
Damn, I wish I was skiing at Heavenly right now. Holy crap. 7 feet in seven
Conditions?
days. 7 feet in
Let's
seven
see.
days.
Some
That's
other quick items
ridiculous.
here. So Efteling will be redoing its Carnival Festival dark ride to remove all the race troll stereotype elements to the attraction, which is okay. It's kind of tough to sit there and be mad about that. Did you ever see a POV of that dark ride?
No, I really don't look at dark ride POVs because usually they're crap, and
Yeah, no, they are.
yeah, so no. It's
It's
not even that they're crap, it's just that you're only there's so much to look at, and then you're forced to look at, the whoever's filming it,
right, the perspective of just that video. No, I agree.
yeah.
I've always thought the POVs of dark rides never do them justice, ever. And I also do typically avoid them. The only reason I was asking is just in case you had ever seen like some of the Asian and African stereotypes that they used in that dark ride, which were pretty brutal.
I didn't look it up after this. I imagine they were just really outdated.
Yeah, they were super outdated, like bones through noses and stuff like that.
Yeah, okay.
Yeah, it wasn't the best look. So
Definitely something that
Efteling,
would have been changed in the United States a very long time ago.
a very long time ago, and they kind of held out at Efteling for a while, and now they're finally doing it. And then Playland Park. There's a bunch of new proposals for the park.
Yeah, I saw that. I didn't really look into it much. I know that, like, maybe an airplane
Yeah,
reimagining.
that's the thing that everyone's been talking about, is that one of the proposals involved bringing back the airplane coaster.
Anything's better than that, what's sitting on that land right now.
Which is
A
the
Velar.
heinous,
Yeah.
awful Zamperla Volare coaster.
I don't, I've said I don't think Velars are They're not painful or me. I just need to ride them, though. I
I
think I
think
never got off it and been like, "Oh my God, that hurt!" I just thought they were boring. And
I always end up having enough space between my body and the two sort of walls of it that I get bounced around a little bit, like the ball in the paint can.
it's just not very comfortable. That's the one thing. It's just not a very comfortable position. Like when they first came out with Stealth and. I was like, "What are you doing in the seating position? That's not flying. Bullshit." And then we rode a Velar. I'm like, "Oh, that seating position's a lot better."
Hey, you know what? Eventually B&M got it figured out, at least I think.
Yeah,
So
maybe Vilcoma is really going to finally perfect it.
I hope so. I'm interested in what they would fly at Fantasialand,
Yeah,
so
or when it opens. That's another question that I really am beginning to have. That won't stop any plans, definitely. But we also have a few little small park closings, coaster closings. We gotta talk about the small parks a little bit.
little bit.
Out of nowhere, Sandia of Ontario, California, closed. Basically, like 3 or like a week's notice or something like that. They say it's closed for renovation, looking for a buyer. Also, there's already been a proposal for office buildings to be built on the site. So, we'll see. I'm glad I got back there last year and got a backseat ride on the Sandia Screamer because that was quite some airtime. That was some of the most intense airtime I've ever had. Ridiculous.
I know some people that missed it. you know, that didn't know what the deal was. Zane, who's out there, he knows. He's like, was it good? I was like, you don't know what you missed, man.
Oh my god, yeah. Like,
I think the way I would put it is this. Like, I don't know if it was actually a good ride, but it was interesting.
Oh, well, I mean, when did you last ride?
It was probably good. I rode it in 99.
Okay, so I last rode it last year.
Or
now
2000.
I feel like I have a different perspective. I feel like, regardless, I feel like I have a different perspective because now all the RMCs have come out and more crazy rides. And I think it still holds, its intensity still holds up to those. Because it's also like, RMCs are well engineered.
Yeah, this wasn't.
Lightning rod excluded. But I don't know if they knew what they were doing. Like, I think they just got it together, and because that's what I feel like of all Mylar. Kind of like, it works, good. It's not hurting anybody, good. Like, and they're safe. But, like, I don't know how much actually, like, engineering of going on to the calculations actually goes into any of their rides. I think they might have actually started finally doing that because the one that they built at in Ocean City, it's not that intense. It's which was really disappointing. I was expecting another one of these crazy things and get it.
I would compare the Scandia Screamer to riding the Riverside Cyclone in the Morgan era. Like, very similarly, both in terms of, like, the comfort level, like, in terms of the trains that Mylar, you know, had on those. Because the Mylar trains that they had on that, and also the High Mylar, I don't know if you ever rode the High Mylar when it was with Ray
Kamak. Is that still operating?
Yeah, I rode the High Mylar a couple different times at the Arizona State Fair.
Because I've been trying to look it up, but, like, I haven't been able to find a fair that actually has had it set up, or if they still run it. Do you have any idea?
I don't think they've run it since there was an accident on it, I think in 2012 or 2013 at the Houston Livestock Show.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know if it's run since that year. I know that they've gone at Zyklon, and I think they got another coaster recently too, did Ray Kamak.
Probably one of the, you know, the, I like to call the Pamphari knockoffs.
Yeah, they got the Interpark Zyklon. They got one of those, yeah. Like everybody else has been getting.
Yeah.
And I think they got something else too. Anyways, so
we'll see what happens.
It is actually a little bit of a loss because it's a very unique, very interesting ride, fun ride.
I can see it getting moved somewhere.
Very extreme airtime. You know, just kind of that different era that. You know, 1990s, we understand what CAD-CAM is, but we don't really know how to use it yet sort of thing.
There you go.
And the other steel coaster that we lost at a small steel park, or a small park, is, we just kind of discovered this today, is the Herschel Wild Mouse over at Joyland.
Bad Mouse.
Yeah, and it has been, it's going to get scrapped, it looks like, and it's being replaced with a ride that, as far as I've ever heard, is one of the most hideous and awful attractions ever devised.
Yeah, I thought they just, like, Googled a random poster image, and that's, they just decided to put something on a page, actually what they bought. I don't know why you would, who's the manufacturer of that piece of crap?
The Diego Cavazo Blizzard?
Okay. Yeah, okay, there you go.
Yeah, those, I thought about trying to go ride one in the UAE because I think there may have been one still operating out there. I mean, the ones that people have been on, everybody say, are horrible. Like, complete bottom of the barrel, like.
Just wondered if it would even pass standards.
I don't know if it would, honestly. Like, it's a really bad Italian ride.
All right, let's just hope that's, you know,
That's not what they're getting.
Yeah, there you go. And yeah, I actually saw that their I think a week ago or so, I saw that their Mad Mouse was. Then we find they talked about the poster. So then.
Yeah, I'm hopeful that they're getting something that's not garbage.
Kind of
or another Pininfarina Zyklon. Like, we don't need another one of those.
Yeah.
But
They
you
showed a
know the
picture of their the ad.
ad for what, the new
No,
ride?
the concrete pad.
Yeah, I saw a picture of that.
Kind of small.
Yeah, so I mean, the Blizzard is a pretty small footprint,
Is.
unfortunately.
Okay.
I don't want
Man.
to believe, I don't want to actually think that's what they're gonna get.
We'll see. Yeah, I mean, very small amount of parks that I haven't made it to in the US, but unfortunately, that's one I have not made it to, and sad that I missed that one. But, you know, I don't, it doesn't surprise me that we're only down to one of those.
Yeah, and I'm at least it's at Little America who's been pretty good about keeping stuff running.
They're all like 50, 60 years old. I mean,
Yeah, they can't last forever. They gotta go
no.
sometime.
Especially with that track system, it just looks so fragile. It looks fine on a kiddie coaster, but then you put it on something like that. I guess they're not that much bigger than Dippers, but yeah, they're down to one of them. I got to ride three of them. We have no Flitzers left, which is
None. There's actually there. Well, there's. Isn't there one
Gravelets.
that's still going with Reithofer that's traveling, and then there's one in the Northwest, I think.
No. Not that I know of. Pretty sure that's it.
So
So.
did because they still weren't. Wasn't Reithofer still bringing out the Indy 500?
No, I know that is. I know that is, but n nothing permanent.
Yeah,
Are you
yeah,
saying,
yeah. There's no permanent ones.
oh, you're
That's
saying another
true.
traveling in the Northwest?
Yeah,
Yeah,
there's another
actually,
traveling one in the Northwest.
I think I remember there was a fair that I was passing from when I was going from Vallejo up to Portland, and there's just no way I could fit it in with the times. By the time I got to where the fair was, it was like 1 a.m. So I saw it and I was like, oh, damn.
Yeah, I forgot what the company is, and I could look it up right now and find out, but.
And then another small one, probably no one has ever heard of it. Leopard's Cove in New Jersey is probably done.
Which park is done?
Blackbeard's Cove.
Oh, that's closed?
See that might be closed. Yeah, we're not official on that one, but
I know that
not a
it
big
was a small
surprise.
place.
It's always been deserted. Well, I've been there twice, and both times it was that. But I don't know that I can think about. We have farting trails or farting trolls at University of Orlando. Park Glitter. Pretty awesome, right?
I have actually stayed away from the farting trolls thing.
How have you not? It's like invaded my Twitter feed. I can't stay away from it from the last like 3 days.
I have been avoiding that stuff like the plague. Like, I've been out of like all the major Twitter beefs for the most part, as or discussions. Like, I heard a few days before the whole thing about that rumor about the person losing their foot on ET happened. Did I even get can I, did anyone ever actually like figure out if that was true or not?
No, I mean, I just heard about it.
Yeah, I don't know. I don't know if I'd buy it either, but you know, whatever. Maybe it happened, maybe it didn't.
Oh, and then, oh God. My local park got into the news a little bit.
What
Thorpe
happened?
Park.
Which one?
Park. Doing. Because they got scared and fell over during haunt.
Somebody got scared and fell over during haunt.
Yeah, and they're suing. The mother's suing
Oh.
for 150,000, saying that
Yeah.
it didn't advertise well enough that you could buy a Nobu necklace. I feel that the park was negligent at. I mean, we never really hear the outcomes of these, but like, I feel like this is one where they, like they need to fight this one because like it could set a than anyone. Because it happens a lot. There's injuries, a lot of injuries during these haunted things. But they cover themselves pretty well with all the tamers.
Yeah, plus it's you expect it to some degree that people are going to like fall over because it's dark.
Right.
It's an enclosed space, you know, but...
Yeah. So,
yeah, I kind of expect. I think they probably will fight it at least a little bit, or you know, maybe they can. They can always take like a settlement that doesn't necessarily, you know, put them at fault too. But I don't know. I don't know.
Oh, so, and I know exactly where the law offices are. I pass it like on a regular basis. Down here, about an hour away from the park. Anyways. I think that's pretty much the news.
Pretty much it, yeah. I mean, otherwise, you know, just the usual things are being constructed at various parks.
Yeah, Yukon Triker,
Copperhead Strike.
Yeah, Copperhead Strike's been done.
Construction has actually started in the Jurassic Park section for the Jurassic Park coaster.
Yeah.
So that's a real thing now, kids. There's no doubt about it. It's happening.
Coast Racers might be delayed, but like, I don't know, like, really matter when park rides open at Magic Mountain anymore, because like,
no,
it's been every day now.
Yeah.
I don't think it matters as much that it opens in the beginning of the year, so.
I'm sure that they would like to have it open, you know, by... I assume the whatever their prime season is, whatever, maybe May, whatever, you know, gets the most
well,
people in the
will
gate.
Never be before Memorial Day weekend, because that's when Six Flags does all their openings. But I don't know, Crazy Vanity opened in July. It's also had a lot of problems. It's been down for a while now. The Zamperla Discovery at Six Flags Over Texas is... much completely disassembled right now. The only thing that's there is the four supports. They're taking down all the motors and all that stuff because apparently it's cost them almost the initial investment to maintain it. So
I wouldn't be surprised at all if Zamperla kind of underpowered those rides, and I don't think anybody else would either.
Yeah, I mean, just look at the hydraulic motors compared to the Mondale and the Mooses. There's like nothing up there. I'm like, how does it work? It looks like magic. How is this huge pendulum actually moving?
The answer is it doesn't for very long.
That's
the downside.
Hopefully Great Adventures will be free of these mistakes.
Yes, we certainly hope it is. Otherwise, they're going to just be rigging all these things up in some fashion in order to keep them running. Who knows?
They definitely got at them, probably, since they've purchased so many of them.
Yeah, you'd hope at least they get some sort of a deal. That or they're going to sue Zamperla into oblivion, one of the two.
Never heard any problems with Kennywoods, though, have you?
I never have heard of any either. I mean, I've heard of many other problems at Kennywood, but that's never been the starting point, right?
No. Like, that one was built, and then, like, this was there for a long time, and they didn't build another one for quite a few years after that.
You know what it could be?
Unless I'm missing something in China or, you know, overseas, but...
Here's a point I'll make. Six Flags Over Texas has a much longer operating season than Kennywood.
Oh, yeah. And heat.
So, yeah, so I wonder if, you know, when you start that ride up in February and you're running it all the way to December every single year, you know, even if you only run it for a couple of years, like, you just run it straight like that for 9 months before you start taking it down for a rehab and doing your off-season rebuilds and stuff, maybe that's part of it.
And Magic Mountain, maybe the heat too. That's another one. So
yeah, I mean it breaks 100 there pretty easily.
Oh yeah.
That's Valencia is a desert. You know, it has a lot of houses in it, but it's a desert, and it gets rough on stuff out there, big time. Yeah, there's not a lot of big, construction updates aside from kind of what we know already. Obviously, the one at Joyland in Lubbock is a little bit of a surprise. I mean, a little bit more what they got than anything else.
Let's just hope that's, yeah, let's just hope for the anything but that. Also, Busch Gardens Tampa Tigris is complete construction.
Yes.
And pictures posted yesterday, I think. One of the lift hills has been half of one of the lift hills has been completely demolished on Gwazi. So that rumor about the first drop seems to be more feasible or plausible.
I have heard increasing confirmation that it's real.
Okay.
I would not expect First Drop to put anything out there that wasn't legit.
No, I wasn't. So, I
So
mean,
I
I
think
know what I
it's.
was hoping for, but whatever it's gonna be, it'll be great. It's gonna be better than it was, so.
Exactly. Yeah. No, I even Gwazi at its very best was a pretty good ride, but
And I got to ride it dueling, and I mean, granted, it was 2001. That's the other thing. I don't remember much about it. And the rides that I really loved, like I remember the hell of out of the original drop of a Riverside Cyclone. You can't forget that.
that was pretty visceral.
Man, like
I remember all of the Riverside Cyclone.
there was no way to brace yourself on that damn thing. It just
No.
did what it wanted to do halfway down.
Yeah,
And they
it
put the
was
photo. I remember the funny thing is they put the photo right there. And there's just no way to look good. Like somewhere I have a photo of my look in there, and it just looks half of me is just like one hand up, and the other half of me is like trying to hold on to dear life. It's oh man.
my that's my that might be my first on-ride picture I have a copy of. It's from 96 on the Cyclone. And they were black and white at that stage.
Yeah, like my friend that I went on this trip with, he showed me when I first stayed at his place. Showed me all those on-ride photos. He showed me one of Millennium Force. I'm like, shit, I thought the quality of these things were really good when I first got it. And like compared to today, I'm like, oh my God, we paid $10 for this? Holy crap.
It's all you had is proof, man. It's all you had.
Yeah, I gotta find my old ride somewhere. They're at my mom's house.
I started organizing my all my brochures and stuff. I
Yeah,
actually had
that's
to get a
not.
whole bunch of more sheets, and it's been a pain, dude. It's been such a pain. Like I was trying to figure out how to do it for a while, and I finally decided to go by states because I figured.
I stopped collecting them a few years back, but I think I'm gonna get back into it.
I never stopped. I always try to grab a fresh brochure from anywhere I'm at. The thing is, like, for a while I was doing it by trip. So, like, all the trips from like each
Okay.
individual weekend I would go out, like I'd put them all together. And now I've kind of gotten to the stage of like all the stuff that was pre, say, 2007. Now I kind of throw that into like a group file. That makes sense. So like anything that's Illinois goes in the Illinois file, that kind of thing.
Right.
Because
Well,
I
it's
have
just
no
a big
idea how else
box.
I'm gonna organize it. Like it's just there's just no way. Especially when you get to like Ohio, like then that's gonna be split to like Kings Island and Cedar Point and Six Flags because there's so many brochures from so many different years, from like the first time I went in '97 to now. Way, way too many brochures. Way too many. But I am going to get that organized. That's going to happen in the near future. And I'm excited about that day. And maybe being able to, like, scan some of that stuff in and do something with it. And the on-ride photos are part of it. Like, there's just so damn many of them. I didn't remember buying that many, but I guess, like, you only have to buy one every 50 coasters when you have, like, 900 coasters on the list. I have a lot. That's where I'm at now, like a lot. Before we get further down that nerd spiral, let's talk about what you've been up to recently, because you've actually done some trips and done some coasters and rides.
Yeah, and one person apparently called me because of my skiing trip report last time. So one person liked it. So I guess I'll do it again. Yeah. My buddy picked me up. Camelback. It is only about an hour from here. Hour and 15 minutes. I mean, he wasn't all that beat up about it because of the how close it was to Dorney, but the Alpine coaster was closed that day. For whatever reason, we have absolutely no idea. No on it. It had to be a mechanical problem. They like temporarily moved it from their website too. I checked today, it's back on there. But like, the only unfortunate thing is if we had known in advance, we probably would have skied up at Elk, which has a which is bigger and probably has better snow. But and I've never skied there. But we had a good time. The skiing's fun there. It was really, really freaking busy when we first got there. But it on a Saturday. But it cleared out. I think there was like a little bit of a there's a little bit of a period where both day skiers were still skiing because you can buy a day pass that goes all day and night, or you can buy a night pass. Can't buy, a morning or a But it's nice skiing. It's okay. The snow is just crap though. It's all made. It's very, very icy. Yeah, I was so glad I had my skis tuned. Like, it was hard to get any edge on it. But yeah, it's Camelback. Next day we drove. Our hotel was like somewhere right between Greek Peak and Holiday Valley. I said he did all the planning, all that stuff. So kind of really realize where I am or any of that crap. Like, oh, okay, there. It's so nice to actually not have to do the planning for a trip. We woke up to some flurries, and well, he's had his car and he's on 50,000 miles, and he was like, oh, well, I'll get to see how this car does in snow, and I'll get to see how my ability of driving in snow is. Been a while. Then we got to find out how it is to drive in the snow with practically bald tires.
Yeah, it's usually not good.
No! I was being a little dramatic, but I told him, like, I think I'm having my first panic attack here. I did not like that situation, especially not being in control of the car. I did not like it. I also found out on this trip that I really cannot fall asleep in a car, because if I fall asleep in a car, I think my body immediately thinks that I've fallen asleep behind the wheel, or I'm starting to nod off, and then I instantly wake up. Which, when I wake up from that, like, waking up from like a nod, I'm like, oh God, oh wait, I'm not driving, I'm good. Yeah, eventually we got there after, our hotel to our first ski resort or ski hill. Like an hour longer. Like we were going up these hills that weren't that steep, and since he had like no grip, we were able to do like 5 miles per hour on some of the hills. It was that bad. But we went to a kissing bridge, which is a small little hill. I won't even call it a mountain. I think the most vertical I recorded that day was like just under 500 feet. The thing was about it is it was snowing the entire day, so the snow was amazing. Like, and it was like really light snow, which is nice. It wasn't like really wet snow, so it was really easy to move through. Because the heavy snow, it can be quite a workout. But this, you just glide through it, even though some places it was over a foot deep. And some of the shots I got of the trees covered in snow were just absolutely gorgeous. It was a fun little hill to ski, but the fixed grip chairs just feel like they take forever. My app finally, like my app that does my recording, told me all the times, and I mean, none of them were like over 7 minutes, but if you had asked me, I would have said we were on those things for like 15 minutes. It feels so slow compared to, the high speed detachables. This was his choice to go to. He skied there a lot. He grew up in Buffalo, so it was kind of a nostalgia trip for him. So, but it was fun because it was like old school skiing, kind of like something you don't see very often anymore, because a lot of these places haven't been able to survive. But then we drove down the road about 40 minutes to Holiday Valley. And Holiday Valley, I really enjoyed. We first started with the Alpine Coaster, which I rode this past summer, actually, so it hasn't been too long. But definitely felt a little bit slower. It's interesting going up a lift hill because there was like probably like a half an inch of ice on the rails going up the lift hill, so it was very like vibrating, vibrational, whatever the word is. Yeah, it was fun. Skiing is really nice. It takes places basically. The ski resort's basically in two valleys, and we were a ski. Most of it was lit up for night skiing. There's just a like permanent. I think there's only like one or two lifts that weren't open for night skiing, but had a lot of like the thing about Camelback is a lot of the terrain feels very much the same because it's one face that's have any curvature, but like to the actual mountain, it's just flat face. And this just it felt like from one side to the resort to the other, it felt like very different terrain. I felt like this was the closest thing that you could get to out west. We skied that. I had some good blacks that I would actually almost consider black diamonds. Nearly. It's just kind of funny. I understand like some of the. Are you still there?
Yeah, I'm still here.
Okay. It's kind of funny how you like. I understand why some of these like Kissing Valley technically had black diamonds, but I understand how they rated. It's like, what is the hardest stuff at that hill? But it's not. There's no standard to it. So like. What some of what places in the East would consider a black diamond could be considered a blue Rockies. It just
This is like the difference in terms of, well, the Rockies are way higher. It's like more powder. I get that part of it. And
yeah, and just longer, steeper. But yeah, it I mean. It's comparatively harder to other stuff at that mountain you're at. But yeah.
like in a global sense, it's
No,
not.
God no. No. I don't think there was barely anything that would considered a black Poconos in these parts of New York. No, when you get up to Placid area and all that, you're gonna get a little better skiing, but that's for another trip. I want to do that bobsled at some point. It's at Lake Placid, and it's I looked at the prices years ago. I haven't looked. It was like a fraction of the price for what the Vancouver and the city costs. Like legitimately, like half the price.
Is
So
it like the same amount? Because I know, like with the luge, like if you
yeah.
do it at if you do it at Salt Lake City, it's definitely like a very abbreviated course, which is just as well because the full course you'll die.
Right, no, you don't start at the top starting gate on, I think, any
Right.
of the rides. But I think that would be the same thing for all of them.
Yeah,
Regardless,
I'd be
yeah,
interested in the bobsled for sure. I've been thinking about doing that for a long time. A long
it's more
time.
about an experiential, like I just want to do it, but and
Yeah.
I don't think I need to, and that's obviously a lot easier to get to right there. Then the next day we drove to Greek Peak, and I think this was the biggest disappointment. I was actually really to this place. It always looked interesting, but I don't know. It was just something about it. Also, there was a lot of closed terrain. I think some of it had to do. They just don't on the stuff that they don't have the ability to blow snow on yet. They don't have enough snow yet, quite yet, to open. Which was most of the harder, more advanced trails. And then they have a backside of the mountain, which I think they might only run on. No, but like, so it just was limited how many trails there were. Ended up finding one trail that was really good. Called Cyclops. I remember it because obviously, you know, Wisconsin Dells.
Yes.
But that was a really fun course because it was actually really steep, and that was a good one. But Alpine Coaster, we go ski from. We got a late start because we were both hurting. I had this one point on my foot that it juts out a little bit. So I bought some really super expensive customized boots. There's no way around it. My boots, even you could the first time when you first got them, you could put it, they put them in a machine that softened them up to warm your a little bit. But so far. I was hurting for whatever reason that time. Got really pissed off. When I was in Alf West, there was this guy on my last day, on my first trip up. Usually I just keep my boots unlatched first trip up and I just take care of it on the top so I avoid the discomfort. And the guy was like, "You know your boots are undone." I'm like, "Yeah, no. Want to buckle them?" I'm like, "No, they'll be fine." Then I managed, and he was in the single rider line with me. I managed to be paired with him, so we started talking. He's like, "Oh, I've never had that problem. Never had any problems with my boots being uncomfortable." I'm like, "My mind, I'm like, that's funny. Never heard anyone who's said a ski boots been completely comfortable ever." It's like, how old are they? I'm like, "It's like the third or fourth season." He's like, "You get new liners." I'm like, "Oh, no, I don't think that would help." And he's like, "No, you really should get new liners." I was just like, I just shut my mouth because I didn't really want to be like, whatever. But it just was so annoying how this guy was like, thinks he knows everything. But, you know. But, the hill closed there. Our skiing ended at 4, and then the Alpine Coaster opened at the same time. And so how many people would actually go on a Monday? We're shocked that it was open on Monday. And we had to double check because we passed by it on the way there. They don't have hours for Monday. It's just Friday, Saturday, and Sunday. And we're like, "Oh, crap." But, yeah, they were open. We could have done, like, unlimited riding for $22, but my friend took one ride, and he's like, "I'm good." It was a fun ride, not as good as Holiday Valleys. Holiday Valleys is actually quite good for Alpine Coasters, I'd say. Really nice setting that goes through a little gully that goes over a stream. That was a nice trip. It was fun. He was going to do another day by himself, but this ended up being like his longest ski trip ever. He was pretty much done after that day. And his equipment's like 20 years old, and his boot lining is literally disintegrating. It was turning his socks yellow.
So in other words, the person that you rode the ski lift with out west,
yeah,
should have given hit this guy the earful instead of you.
Oh yeah, definitely, yeah, like that, yeah, that one. Well, I also give him an earful for not having a helmet. It's like, "I'm supposed to wear a helmet." I'm like, "Yeah, like, you're going to be the minority." He finally looked around and he's like, "Oh, crap, I am." Every time we walk by a ski shop, I'm like, "Get a helmet, you know." So he definitely said that he's going to upgrade everything this year. So 20 years isn't too bad for equipment. It is, like, probably close to $2,000 in.
Yeah, I mean, if you can get 20 years out of anything, like, you're in okay shape, I think. That's my general perspective on any sort of recreation.
Oh, yeah.
20 years of entertainment on something's pretty good. So you and I are going to have to go out and do a Camelback's coaster now, especially that it's not dead forever. That's helpful.
Like ahead of time.
I'm sorry, what'd you say?
Definitely check ahead of time, make sure there's no problems.
Yeah, no, I will. I will. No, it'll probably be March, I'm guessing.
The worst thing was, or at Camelback, there are two high-speed detachables, and one of them goes right on top of the... Must have passed over it probably 10 times. So he was definitely reminded.
Yeah, I'm hoping to get out there at some point this winter. I would have loved to have gone out to Duluth and gone on their ride, but their ride isn't open during the winter time.
Yeah, some aren't. You know, most of them, pretty much every one of them is open during revenue. But yeah, there's one in BC that's at one of those pipe ones. That one's only during summer.
Yeah, there's a couple of them out there, and that's always irritating.
Yeah. You can make really long.
I have decided, I will point out, this year I'm going to go up and do the Alpine Coaster in Michigan. Or not Alpine Coaster, the Alpine Slide that's still here, because I recognize now that those are going to be gone really soon.
Except for Camelback built one this year. Past
really?
Year.
They built one?
Yeah, they built a new one this past year.
I was looking through online because I had remembered, you know, all the Alpine slides I went on when I was a kid, like in Vermont and Maine, and like none of them are still in existence. Like they're all gone.
Okay. Like the only one, because most of them, the Alpine coasters replaced it. I know Breckenridge has one still. I actually have no idea where Breckenridge's is because I think it's completely covered during the summer or the winter. So. But, no, like, I skied over the Alpine slide at Camelback because a catwalk just goes right, or a ski scope goes right across both of the tracks, which is kind of funny. And then Attitash had one back in 2014. And that's when I realized I'm definitely afraid of them now because, you know, the Alpine coaster, you can go full throttle all the whole time, but, like, it took, like, two turns on the Alpine slide, I was like, oh, no, you can't do that.
Like you can hurt yourself. You can hurt yourself pretty bad.
Yeah.
That's kind of the appeal.
Michigan had one anywhere.
Yeah, it's up at, it's what's called Crystal Mountain. It's up by Traverse City. It's way up north. And so it's always kind of a pain in the ass to get to during the summertime for that limited period of time that it's operating, but I really just need to make the effort this year. I know there's one actually in, like, Western Illinois also, oddly enough.
Isn't it? Yeah, it's going to the place that's getting Redwood Cavern's old gondola.
Okay. Yeah, it's... I didn't even know that there was, like, a ski resort in Illinois, and then... Sure enough,
I don't know if it's even a ski resort. It has a golf course. I have no idea. I just looked into it for a second because I was like, what place in Illinois could actually get a gondola? I'm sure the vertical on it will be slightly different, though.
Yeah,
in Illinois.
It's Chestnut Mountain Resort.
Okay.
I have a hard time believing it's much of a mountain, but, you know.
So there is skiing there.
They're skiing in Illinois somehow.
Okay.
It wouldn't surprise me if it involves, like, a landfill that's been co-opted. But,
oh, okay.
You know.
But you know what else you could do if you go up north to that slide?
What?
You go to Cedar Valley.
Well, that's a given.
Because I don't think we've mentioned that on a podcast yet. I don't think we thought to do that.
That they're getting the water jumping?
Yeah, because we thought it was one of the ones that had a tether, but we found out back in October that it's going to be a coaster. and actually jump the track into a pool.
Yes, and it's a full circuit.
Right. So
I think we basically had determined at that time that that was the best thing ever.
Yeah.
Possibly the best new ride of 2019, if and when they get it operating.
Just the most unique thing.
I think they got it from the Australian Carnival Circuit or something like that. And
how did you find that out?
I had to do some research to even get all the info on that ride.
Did you go? Did you go on the dark web for this?
You have to get Tor to find this information.
Yeah.
The dark net. The dark coaster net.
Yeah.
Oh,
you don't want to know what's on there.
Yeah, no, I don't either, actually.
Oh, God.
That's actually really terrifying.
Oh, man.
But it looks like they're also going to be adding like a paintball, or they already have a paintball thing.
I guess they said
RV sites, it looks like.
Yeah, that's what's new.
And a zip line, but the water flume ride is going up, and there's pictures of it on Facebook.
Yeah, I don't know if I'll make it this year because this year is more about just going to places that I haven't been or new credits and all that stuff. So, you know, I had my fill of Cedar Point last year. So if it happens, it happens, but it's not going to be.
So did you want to talk a little bit about your European stuff?
Yeah, I just saw a question.
Sure.
Where do I start? So,
you want to go to Europe.
Right. I want to go to Europe. Probably in August-ish. Only park that I know that's, like, I'm definitely going to go to is Efteling.
Okay.
My starting point, pretty much. Okay. Not necessarily my parting point. That's my starting point of my trip.
Right.
Planning. Want to get on Bob before it closes, so I had ridden all five of the Instant Bobsled.
When is its closing day next year?
In September sometime.
Okay.
I'll also probably build in an alternate day because I know it doesn't any rain.
Yes. Yeah. No, that definitely would ruin your day if you specifically need to get on Bob.
Yes. Alternate day into the trip, just in case. But I feel like all this is a hell of a lot easier than it was even 10 years ago. I feel like, especially with Google Translate, and then, like, I always said that if I go international, the first place I'd probably go is England, so I can just not have the barrier of language first time, but still, you know, be over the seas, but I feel like it's not that much of a problem, right?
No.
No.
No. I mean, Efteling, everything is in English, and they have like English pins on their name tag.
Oh, okay. So you know.
And the majority of them speak English in the park, so it's really easy. Like, I would say, you know, having just gone over and done the trip, I basically didn't really even, you know, I would do like a "Do you speak English?" in Dutch kind of thing. And then I would converse in English and got English menus at Efteling and Toverland and really didn't have any issues at Walibi, Belgium either, for that matter, when we went there. I don't imagine that you'd have anything appreciably different happen to you if you went to Baba John Land, for instance, or something like that.
I didn't even think about that park. Wow. I don't even know where to...
I think the challenge, you know, in terms of trying to figure out what you want to do in Europe.
Yeah.
And this was the one that I had, and this is the reason why I ended up going last year, is when Europa had the fire, it kind of removed Europa from the standing for the year because they lost stuff.
But you've already been there. That's different, though, for me.
That's true, but my wife hadn't been there, and I want her to go. I want her to go to Europa.
Yeah, yeah.
But... by kind of, in some ways, you have to, like, pick and choose. Like,
oh, it's so hard.
So that becomes the challenge, is, like, what are you willing to not see? What are you willing to not go to? And what are you willing to go to? And it's tough because if you think of Europe as this big monolith, you want to go to everything at the first trip, and you can't. Like, you just, it
No.
can't happen.
It doesn't even seem like that big a monolith. It feels like everything is so much closer together compared to the United States, to be honest with you.
Yeah, and once you have a rental car, like, you know, you're looking at your big distances being like 2 hours or 2.5 hours,
With
which,
parks that don't close that late.
yeah, like, so like Efteling, if you go during the summer, especially in August, you can probably go there during a period where it's going to be open until 11 p.m. They
Okay, so
run
I looked
late.
at the. Okay, well, I forget. I looked at a few of them really quickly, but I noticed that I won't be able to go until nearly the end of the week operation. But I noticed that a few of the parks, like Efteling, Cageland, Europa, they all are open, so that's no problem.
Yeah, the big ones are definitely going to be open all week. European parks do close early, so for anyone out there that's interested in booking a European trip to go to parks, aside from Disney Paris, Efteling, Bronelund, Tivoli, and probably PortAventura, and maybe you could say, like, well, also Blackpool Pleasure Beach, Brighton Pier, and maybe Parque de Atracciones in Madrid. Aside from those parks, and I mean, that seems like it's a long list, but in the grand scheme of the number of parks there are in Europe, it's not that long. Most of them close pretty early, and by early, we're saying like 6 o'clock.
Yeah, you're lucky if they stay open to 8. Seems like Wallaby Holland for some reason stays open until 11 on Tuesdays.
Yeah, that's really weird. Yeah, I see
And
that, like, that stuff I have no
it's
idea
half
why.
a year or more than other days.
I'm
Okay, damn.
gonna throw it out there that Walibi may not know what they're doing as a
Okay.
company. I'll just throw that out there. But most of the parks, as a general rule, operate something like 10 to 6. And, you know, the challenge then is if you want to go ride, 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 what do you do after the parks close? Well, you have to go to fairs. So that's when you
And
have to get, that's where you have to start digging deep
you get Alan.
into, yeah, then into like Kermes websites, which can be very helpful. And there's several out there which I can guide you towards.
Yeah, but I mean, in that case, like, I'd help you. Because I know how to do it in the United States for the most part. That's still hard, though. I imagine the process isn't that much different. But, I mean, I use Facebook for the most part for America.
It is different. And the reason
Okay.
why it's different in Europe versus the United States is that in the United States, the way carnivals operate is that a fair provider, basically like county fair providers, you know, whoever owns the fairgrounds, will contract with an individual provider for rides. Which is why, like, Wade Shows has 200 rides, and Ray Kamak has, and Bishop, they work together. Have a ton of rides and ride entertainment. You know, the old Conklin shows, Astro, et cetera, thing that's amalgamated. Like, old, you have a bunch of really huge companies that have a lot of independent groups of rides that, or not independent groups of rides, but independent units. So they can run 10 different spots at once as a single company. In Europe, you don't have that. It's pretty much every show is booked as an independent show. Whereas in the United States, virtually every show is booked as a package. So you don't really know what's going to get booked into a fair. Like, you can look at the past year of that fair and have a decent idea as to what's going to show up, especially with the larger fairs, but it's never a given because it almost always constantly changes based on who they contract with, because everything is independent, and that also makes the fairs way more expensive than the US because there's no such thing as a wristband deal.
Well,
Every ride is always individually priced. Always.
Do the fairs themselves have entry costs like a lot of Americans?
No, usually not.
Okay, because like anything that's like a livestock show basically has, you know, a $20 fee to get in.
Yeah, there's no livestock really in any of these.
That helps a lot then.
Yeah, it's they're pretty much all just they were all based around commerce initially, and they've sort of been usurped by the rides, generally speaking, though a lot of them still have, you know, different food booths and there's portable restaurants that travel around at some of the big ones like the Schoberfuhr that I sent you the link to at Luxembourg. That's probably the biggest fair that will be in your orbit at that time, by far.
How about German fairs, though?
I'm sorry? The German fairs at the time that you're going to be over there are either going to be really small or they're going to be on the wrong side of the country. Like, there's the big fair at that time is in Nuremberg, which is like, you know,
Mentioned
basically where
Nuremberg.
you're going to be at is the equivalent of being in El Paso when the big fair rides are going to be in Houston.
Thing about Nuremberg.
So that's the one challenge. Like a lot of the fair rides, the big German rides are out there that aren't going to be at Schoberfuhr. Schoberfuhr has a pretty good mix, as you'd expect, being that it's, you know, a Benelux country and it's crotched in between Belgium, Holland, Germany, and France. So it's got a pretty good mix of big stuff. I mean, like really big stuff. So
Well,
yeah,
I kind of want to go to
it's.
Nuremberg because I kind of want to drive on. That's a thing.
Well, you're gonna drive on the Autobahn no matter what if you're in Germany.
Yeah, but the no, Nuremberg, Nuremberg Ring, famous racetrack.
Yeah, you want to go to the Nürb. Well, that's the Nürburgring.
Oh, is that that's different, isn't it?
So yeah, what you're talking about is.
I don't even know where that is in Germany.
So the Nürburgring is actually something that you could go to. Because it's not in Nuremberg. Yeah, the ring is a different thing than in Nuremberg. Like, it sounds similar, but it's spelled differently enough to be different.
Yeah, it's sweet to have to talk about these parks and try to pronounce things. Oh my God, it's going to be hilarious.
Yeah, you're gonna be like, you'll figure it out eventually. I'll put it that way. But no, if you wanted to go to the ring, if you want to do like a sort of a circle trip like what I did last year, it's halfway between Dusseldorf slash or halfway between Cologne and Luxembourg City. I mean, it's out in the hills, as you'd expect, because that's kind of the whole gimmick with the ring.
Okay, so it's in East Germany. West Germany, rather.
West Germany, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, whereas all the big stuff that you're thinking of, like all the rides that you'd want to go on, are going to be in East Germany at that time frame. Like
Well, I don't
way
know.
far away.
Fairs, I'd probably put second. Probably lock in most of my travel, and then that's how I always do it. Mostly, something to do afterwards if I can fit things. But the quality of rides in Europe are also a lot better.
Yeah, the quality of rides in your, especially European fairs, is astronomically better than it is in the U.S. I mean, it's not even like just to like possibly compare the two. Like it's.
I'm pretty sure Ariel is just going to get sick looking at some of
But
them.
you know, and they also operate them a lot differently too, where they operate them much more, you know, intensely. They're run much faster and for much longer periods of time. But you
Yeah.
have to because you're paying for each ride individually. You can't, you know, hand over €6 for an experience that ends up not being up to snuff. Especially when everyone around you that also has a spinning ride is in competition with you directly.
Now, you're talking about well, obviously, like you have running cars a lot more freedom. I want to do fit in normal stuff as well. like having trains and all that stuff would pretty much eliminate all due to that. But I mean, from a cost standpoint, are you really going to see that much of a difference from a cost?
For renting a car versus
I
taking
mean, it's going to be more
trains.
expensive, but ridiculously more. I know gas is extremely expensive compared to here, though. But it's usually about $7 a gallon.
Yeah, even if you pay like 650 a gallon, the way I would put it is this, okay? If you drive from Brussels to the Nürburgring, let's just use that as an example. It's 276 kilometers. Okay. So as a whole, 276 kilometers, so that's times 0.62, so that's 171 miles. Right. And that's basically a third of a loop from like Paris through Brussels over into Germany. So you probably in the course of a week and a half, if that's what you ended up doing, you might put down 800 or 1,000 miles, but in the kind of car that you're going to get when you're in Europe, which is going to be, an automatic, more than likely. If you do you drive stick?
Not for a very long
Okay, so
time.
you want to drive an automatic.
Yeah, pretty much.
You're going to want to get something that's probably not a smart for four, like something maybe slightly bigger than that. But that's still going to get you 35 miles to the gallon. Your tank is going to get you, you're going to pay for maybe two, three tanks. So between that and the rental car, which if you get a good deal on it, you might pay a couple hundred bucks for, plus the
Yeah.
gas, maybe you end up spending, 350 or 400 bucks on the car. And the train ticket might be cheaper. Kind of, sort of, but the thing is, you have to deal with all the transfers.
I mean,
You
the
have to
trains
deal.
aren't cheap either, though. I mean, I haven't looked at the prices, but I'm pretty sure they're not. I mean, right?
If you're taking the train, I mean, you can get things like, you can get rail passes, though really for a week and a half, it's not that great of a deal. If you're using high speed rail, it costs more than, interurban rail or urban rail. It would be cheaper to do it by rail, but also in some ways impossible to do what you want to do.
And you just lose your freedom.
You lose the ability to get things done in efficient manners. And if you want to do like this park, like if you want to go, for instance, to Toverland, there's no efficient, easy way to get there by train. Like you're going to have to transfer to a bus. You have to figure out your bus schedule to get you back to the train, to get you to another major city, to get you to wherever you need to go next. Whereas if you're in a car, instead of needing to take the circuitous route of buses and trains to get, from there to say Efteling, you just drive and it's an hour and 15 minutes. And it's done. So for me, I think the ability to get around in a car in Europe beats a bus or buses and trains and things like that at this stage. Especially because with a car, and this is the real beauty of having a car. The car lets you get into small towns and
Oh,
get right
yeah.
in the center of town, and to me, like that's what's more interesting and more fun about going to Europe is going to places that aren't necessarily the big cities. Not that the big cities are bad, but like, ending up in a random town in Belgium. Or being able to get off the freeway and go drive over and see, World War I Memorial, for instance. Just because you see a sign for it. Or, drive over and see a castle in Germany, things like that. Can't do that on a train unless you've actively planned in advance to do all that stuff. And so to have that additional freedom, and that ability to just stop at a grocery store and buy supplies or whatever. Those things are all to me like what makes it so that I enjoy renting vehicles in Europe at this point more than using trains by far. I mean, there's all the little things that come with it. Like you want to make sure that you have like a shopping bag, for instance, when you go to a grocery store in Europe. You can buy like a little shopping bag and a bag, Like there's a little like it's almost like a it looks kind of like a poncho, and you can buy them at IKEA for a dollar, and then it folds out on a shopping bag. You can just use that when you go there and load your groceries up that way, and you know, as long as you have a credit card with a chip in it, you're fine. Like everything's easy.
I have to, don't I have to like pre-set up a pin to make sure that's all set up though?
No, you don't.
Okay.
No.
And do any of the rental cars typically have any I mean, are they all unlimited like here? Miles?
Yeah,
Or
it's
restrictions
always,
on? Okay.
it's generally, you can always, you want to double check, obviously, when you're booking, but it's usually unlimited mileage. Yeah. I don't think I've ever encountered a rental where I've had to, I would have to have paid over X amount of miles, except for once in Oman. So, aside from that one time overseas, mileage has never been an issue with a rental car that I've rented. Plus, in Europe, you're dealing with like, you know, sort of typical rental car things rather than dealing it with them on a, like an island or in the Middle East. So the gas tank is always full when you bring it back, obviously, and then it's always full when you get it. And obviously, the staff there generally speaks English, especially when you fly into a major airport like Charles de Gaulle or Amsterdam Schiphol, something like that. Like it's really easy to get your car and get in and out. I've never had any problems. Or even when I was in Italy, same thing. I mean, it's just not a challenge. At least I don't find it to be a challenge. And if you have a cell phone and you preload your maps, you don't even necessarily have to have service. But you can also rent things like Wi-Fi devices. That way, you have internet access in your car, for example. Those are pretty common and pretty easy to rent out, you know, from any major car rental dealership like Avis or Enterprise or Europcar or anything like that.
Even the Wi-Fi device?
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Okay. I thought I always heard Hyde say that he just gets in the airport, but
It always it depends. I mean, for
okay.
me, you know, I have an unlocked phone. I always get unlocked phones now.
You tether with
So,
that?
I'm sorry?
Can you tether with the unlocked phone?
Yeah, absolutely.
I don't
I
know.
mean,
I just don't. And then you just get a SIM when you get there, right?
yeah.
I just like to have all this prepared and knowing exactly where I'm going, especially when like you first get there. Like the last thing I want to do is when I get there, try to figure out things. Like the first 24 hours, I want to know exactly what I'm doing because it's going to be so foreign to me.
Dumped. No, when I got off the plane at Charles de Gaulle and we got through customs and immigration, I had my bag, and you exit out into the main terminal, you pass right through the crowd of people that are waiting to, you know, get people for car rides. And this is at Charles de Gaulle. Obviously, it's different at Schiphol. It'll be a different company there. I don't remember who it is off the top of my head, but at Charles de Gaulle, the orange booth is right there. Like, you don't have to leave the airport or anything. It's 40 euros. It lasts for 2 weeks. You get 10 gigabytes of data.
Yeah, it's more than enough.
And, like, you also get, I think, like, you know, like 20 text messages and, like, 10 minutes of talk, which you're never going to use. But is there anyways. And they set it up. You can ask them to set it up for you right there. So they'll put the SIM card in, they'll activate it, hand the phone back to you, and you're good. And all you have to do is make sure that you set your phone so it'll roam, and that's it. It's over. Like, it'll roam throughout Europe, and you'll have data. And it's the only thing I would say that would be different is if you fly into Rome. Rome doesn't have any cell phone booths there, or no, Venice doesn't have any there. So you'd actually have to go to a cell phone shop in downtown Venice, and there's a Vodafone one, and there's a whatever the other company is there. But I think Rome actually does have them now. But most of the airports have them, and you can get a SIM chip there, and you're off and running. I mean, it's pretty easy.
Now, is this something like that we do our airports have this stuff? I mean, obviously I'm never looking for it, but is it there? And I just never seen it.
I feel like now the next time I go to Orlando, I'm going to have to look around and see if they've got like a Verizon or T-Mobile station or something there.
That's why I feel like you make it sound so easy, but I've never seen it ever, anywhere I've ever flown. And the last time I flew to Europe was in 99, so yeah, it was a time ago, so.
Yeah, no, it's definitely there. Again, it's kind of one of those things like once you know to look for it, like all of a sudden it appears. You know, like if
Sure.
you've just never thought about it before, it probably you've never like thought to look, but you know, probably in smaller American airports they're not there. I know they're not in Detroit.
Anyways, moving on though.
Yeah.
What do you do for what's your source for like booking? Hotels and stuff like that. You still use
Depends.
Priceline?
Depends on what I use or what I want. For me, I think there's actual value in staying on property at Efteling and at Fantasialand if you go to both, because they're both pretty separated out from everything else, and they have decent hotels with decent stuff, and you get early entry and free breakfast and things like that. So to me, those parks have a real value in terms of staying with them. Europa does too. Port Aventura, I'd say the same thing. I mean, most of the parks that have their own hotels, I would say like it's if you're going to those parks for a full day, it's worth at least investigating, checking in the night prior to stay a night. And obviously you would book those directly through their web portal.
And you're not looking at ridiculous prices like Disney.
No, not even close. I think Fantasialand's Bing Lao Hotel was like 179 a night maybe with tickets.
With tickets.
Yeah.
Okay. I was
And
to say 179, that's much, but with tickets, that's more like 140.
then Efteling
Well, if
was
it's
more, but like we were there, we were staying at the Efteling Hotel, and you know, that also comes with your passes to get in, and you get early entry into the park.
Is it typically like two passes or whatever?
Yeah, it's two
Hours? Okay.
passes. So that maybe it was like 300 euros a night or something like that. But again,
Okay.
given that, you know, if you're going to be there for a couple days, like then you have the freedom to walk back and forth between the room and there in case you get yourself nice and soaking wet riding the raft ride Piranha or something. Or to just go back and take a nap in midday if you're there when it's open till 11 p.m.